This is a new 8-part military thriller podcast series from Point of the Spear. Meet Thomas Stone, a once dedicated Special Forces Marine, who finds himself torn between duty and vengeance when he's cast aside and thrust into the clandestine world of CIA Black Ops. As a covert operative, he unravels a sinister government cover-up, one that has cost the lives of countless American soldiers. Forced into a perilous mission to erase an archive of damning secrets at Walter Reed National Military Hospital, Stone makes a life-altering decision that changes the game forever. Abandoning the mission and taking hostages to secure his own survival, he becomes the hunted, marked for elimination by the very agency he once served. Rogue Soldier, Episode 1. Written by Robert Child. Inside a darkened third-floor studio apartment near the Fairfax Metro Station, a tow-headed man wearing headphones in his late 20s in a green Marine Corps sweatshirt and jeans stared at a flickering computer monitor. On screen, his black-gloved hands raised a square box with a 9-number keypad and digital countdown timer, his C4 explosive. His thumb clicked the arming control, and his computer hands tossed the powerful explosive behind a concrete pillar. Computer voice: "Bomb has been planted." The man grabbed his on-screen Glock 19 pistol and fired several shots into the air, alerting the enemy to his location. His unsuspecting opponent, a black teen halfway across the country in another state, took the bait and entered the man's kill zone. "Wait, no!" the trapped teen yelled as the military explosive detonated. A yellow-orange flash accompanied by a gray mushroom cloud and charred burn residue where the teen stood signaled another kill shot to the Counter-Strike GO opponent. A frantic stream of expletives filled the tow-headed man's headphones as he smiled at his fifth consecutive match victory. "Ultrazon, you gotta be smart, bro. You walked right into my kill zone." "Ultrazon," the undaunted black teen replied. "Mastodon, I got one respawn left. Let's go again in the abandoned warehouse." "No can do, bro. Gotta leave for an appointment soon." The man felt the teen's disappointment through the computer as he signed off the online game and drained a half-empty Miller next to the keyboard. Nearby was a greasy, half-open Domino's box perched on a makeshift milk crate coffee table. Mastodon rose, flipped open the pizza box, and grabbed the last slice. His mood shifted as he chewed and started to pace, his eyes darting to a silent LCD television in the corner. NTN News was unspooling the media talking points of the day. The gamer, former Marine Tom Stone, was always anxious before receiving a new mission, but today he was doubly on edge. His career in Black Ops had started innocuous enough 2 years earlier. He'd act as a link in a chain, pick up a 15-foot truck, drive its cargo to a Walmart and walk away, never knowing where the vehicle went, what it contained, or who picked it up. Once he gained his CIA OCO's official cover operative trust at Camp Lejeune, the covert ops expanded in complexity and secrecy. Today, instead of downloading Larson's encrypted self-deleting mission directive from an offshore gaming server, Tom was messaged to meet the OCO in person 20 miles to the west in Conway Robinson State Forest. Stone speculated they were grooming him for more substantial Black Ops assignments. He was close to the point where there was no turning back. He knew far too much. Tom had been learning his tradecraft well, becoming a CIA asset over the last 24 months since his Marine discharge. However, this scheduled meetup in a 400-acre remote forest made him wonder if his status was shifting from an asset to a liability. His mind drifted back to the day he began this journey. 2 years earlier, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Tom Stone, nursing a black eye, sat with hands folded in his lap as his senior commander, Lieutenant Colonel John Roach, holding a gray personnel folder, paced behind a paneled desk in a large office. Roach occasionally glanced back at Stone and finally spoke. "You know, Stone, for all your nonsense, you're still one of the best demolition specialists in 2nd Battalion." He picked up a letter from his desk and handed it to Stone. "Colonel Hamilton even forwarded a letter of commendation. But that doesn't excuse the lack of discipline or attention to duty that the Corps demands. I think you know this." Stone, holding Hamilton's commendation letter, acknowledged him. "Yes, sir. It won't happen again, sir." Roach waved him off as he put the personnel file back on his desk and sat down. "No, Stone. You've already had way too many chances. If it were another senior commander, your ass would have been out of here a long time ago. You've lost the respect of your team and the confidence of senior command. That's the bottom line here." Tom closed his eyes. "Stone, everybody's got a right to their political views, but not when they strap on the uniform and swear an oath to protect the country, however imperfect she may be." Sir? Roach put a hand up to stop Tom. No. We've come to the end of the line. I'm recommending a general discharge with a mandatory psychiatric evaluation. It's time you got yourself together, Stone. On someone else's time, not the military's. Tom could say or do nothing after 3 tours in Afghanistan with an elite Marine Special Ops Raider unit. His military career was over. His body sagged. He had cascaded in the months following his return from the Farah Province mission, disillusioned and tangled up in altercations on base with other team members who didn't agree with his politics or point of view. Until this paperwork is processed, you're confined to barracks, dismissed. Stone rose, instinctively saluted. Roach paused, gave him a crisp salute in return, then called to an aide outside his office. Sergeant Larson, escort this soldier out. Larson, 29, a formidable man, appeared in the doorway. He had dark hair and cold gray eyes. Yes, sir. The aide stepped aside and allowed Stone to exit the office. Larson closed the commander's door behind him. He guided Stone out, keeping close. As they left the building, Larson turned and passed Tom a folded slip of paper. Once you're off base, sign onto this secure server. You'll be provided the login and password separately. What? What server? What are you? Larson remained silent as Tom looked down at the URL on the paper. It was an FTP web address followed by a series of numbers. He returned his eyes to Larson, who had already headed back inside. Fairfax, Virginia. Tom wiped the sweat from the back of his neck, feeling his heart begin to race. He stared blankly at the silent cable news channel and considered his upcoming meeting with Larson in an hour in the state forest. What if the CIA did want to eliminate him? How much did he really know anyway? What had he done? Prior to this pivotal day, and after his general discharge from the Marines, Tom left North Carolina and relocated to Northern Virginia. Although his evaluation recommended treatment for PTSD, he had fallen through the cracks of the backlogged VA medical system, turned down for a spot in a warrior transition program. The best the Veterans Affairs Department could offer him were 30-minute weekly therapy sessions via video conference. Stone never signed on. His CIA covert assignments and a small monthly stipend, all in cash, had been a lifeline allowing him to survive. Tom had a deepening loyalty to the agency. He followed their strict guidelines to the letter, even securing a cover job driving for Uber when they insisted. Tom's views also started changing regarding his suspicions about the government. Other operatives he encountered were patriots like he considered himself to be at his core. He was maturing and realizing that perhaps he hadn't had the full picture of things. He and other independent contractors like him were just doing some of the dirty work that had to be done to keep the country safe. Conway Robinson State Forest. In his dark blue Hyundai, Tom made a right turn into the State Forest Access Road turnaround off Route 29. The day was overcast and humid. The parking area was nearly vacant, which was no surprise this being just past midday on a Tuesday. Larson had instructed him to take the blue trail exactly 1/4 mile east into the forest, and he would meet him there. Tom grabbed his phone from the cup holder and checked the map navigation. The blue trail thankfully was listed, and he set the map navigation mode to pedestrian. Stone brought a bag with him with some water bottles and a Marine service pistol. Reaching for it, he stopped and decided against taking it. Showing up with a weapon didn't precisely convey the right message. He decided to leave it in the car. Tom exited the car and set out on Blue Trail, which was about 20 yards distant to his right. Making his way through the increasingly thick forest, he continually scanned both the right and left sides of the trail. The overcast sky was darkening, and it felt like it could rain at any moment. Tom started to feel a creeping dread that he hadn't before, and wished he had his weapon now. Tom checked his phone and saw he was coming to the pin marker he'd set for 1/4 mile when he heard his name called, Stone. Emerging from behind a thick pine, 15 yards ahead on the right of the trail, Larson, in a plaid shirt, jeans, and black backpack, waved him forward. Tom forced a smile, waved, and headed in his direction. Sorry about the unusual meeting spot, but tree canopy is always your friend. Tom looked skyward, and indeed they were obscured by a forest covering. Satellites see all, let's walk a little, Larson said as he pointed to an unmarked trail heading into the thicker brush. Nervous, Tom decided not to follow. Wait, just tell me what the job is. We can talk here. I'm better walking and talking. It's an EOD op. Stone knew that meant explosives and demolition. Larson continued to move away, but Tom's feet stayed planted. Larson turned around, surprised, giving him a sideways look. Stone, if we'd wanted to kill you, we wouldn't still be talking, as he glanced to his right. A man emerged in green woodland camo with a blue hunting cap a distance away. He held a rifle across his chest, which Tom could discern, even at this distance, was an HS Precision sniper rifle, standard issue in federal agencies. Tom stepped forward to follow Larson. Stone, we need to make something disappear. Something? What? A storehouse of records the public doesn't need to see. Records? Doesn't the NSA have everything on digital? Not everything. These are pre-internet and about to be declassified. Stone nodded to go on. His internal red flags were rising. They need to be erased. Okay. Where? Walter Reed. Tom stepped back. Wait, Walter Reed? The military hospital? His mind tried to compute if he'd heard Larson correctly. I don't understand. You want me to take out a target in one of the most secure military facilities in the country? Larson nodded, then sighed. Stone knew the man was considering how much to divulge. Tom felt trapped with his body becoming rigid but needed answers. He decided to accept the job but find a way to slip out of it. Larson, I'll do the job, but I gotta know why the CIA wants to bomb Walter Reed Hospital. Stone, we're not bombing Walter Reed. We're eliminating files that are due to be relocated to a less secure facility, and that can't happen. Tom shook his head. What are these records? You're pushing your boundaries here, Stone. As he glanced to his right, Tom held firm. Look, I said I'd do the job, and I'll do the damn job. I just gotta know why. Okay, Stone, but listen very carefully. Once you have TS-level clearance, even on a single mission, you cross a line. Do you understand? I understand. Larson was satisfied. You've heard of GWS? Gulf War Syndrome? Yeah. We destroyed tons of chemical weapons in Iraq. Everything from VX to sarin to mustard gas. Right. Our forces were widely exposed during the chemical demolition process and a separate friendly fire nerve gas attack. Tom recalled stories he'd read in military times of disabled Gulf War vets dying in large numbers from brain cancer and other terminal illnesses. The DoD embargo on impacted Desert Storm medical records just got lifted. 300,000 files are being transferred to the VA Records Management Center in St. Louis. They'll be fully accessible to the vets for the first time. Tom's stomach dropped, realizing the goal of the mission. Larson continued, "That's a $3 trillion liability, Stone, and the government's not paying the bill." It was common knowledge throughout all service branches that 80% of Gulf War-related disabilities claims were denied. The CIA wanted to up that to 100% permanently. Larson removed his black backpack and tossed it to Stone, who caught the unexpectedly heavy bag. $250,000 in cash. You'll get another $250,000 when the job's done. Tom unzipped the bag and confirmed the contents. A federal convoy is due to start removing the records on the 26th. That's 3 weeks away, Tom protested. More than enough time. Special Activities Division will supply the thermite grenades. They'll be left on site in a secure location. We'll provide you a cover job and access. Tom acknowledged him. Leave no trace, Stone. Every file has to burn. Got it? Larson started to step away and motioned his armed agent to follow him. He stopped short and turned back to Stone. Your sister lives in Tallahassee, right? As he pulled a photo from his shirt pocket and showed it to Tom. Tom looked down at the picture. Two school-age boys in sweatshirts and backpacks were getting on a school bus. She's got some cute kids. Kevin and Mikey, right? I had a Star Wars backpack just like that growing up. Big Star Wars fan. Larson returned the photo to his shirt, gave Tom an icy look and headed back down the path to join his man. Tom stood holding the bag, watching the men disappear down the trail.